Hello, Mr. Lawler, Jerry Lawler. Do you remember me? I'm Andy Kaufman from Hollywood. Remember, you pushed me around in the ring last time I was down in Memphis, Tennessee? Well, let me tell you something, Mr. Lawler. I am not a hick. I am not from Memphis, Tennessee. I don't come from Tennessee like you do, okay? I come from Hollywood, California, where I make movies and TV shows. I am a national television star, and I want the respect that I deserve when I come down to Memphis. And I don't like any hick like you pushing me around in the ring. I never agreed to wrestle you. I was wrestling someone else. You stuck your nose in. You came in the ring. You pushed me around, and now you know what I'm going to do? Mr. Lawler, I have a lot of money, okay? A lot of money. And I've hired a lawyer, and I am going to sue you for every cent that you've got. Every cent that you're worth. You will be in debt to me for the rest of your life. You'll never eat again when I'm through with you. You'll never wish, you'll wish you never heard the name Andy Kaufman. Do you hear me?
You can get all the lawyers you want to, Andy Kaufman, and you can sue me all you want to, but I've got a very simple solution for you, wimp. And I've realized that he's obviously got somebody taping this, or he's going to find out what I say. So if Andy Kaufman wants to live out his fantasy of being a wrestler, I can let him live that out real easily, Lance. If he would ever once step into the wrestling ring with a man, you would see what it would be like to be a wrestler, and it would end your fantasies and end your dreams in just about 30 seconds, and you would never want to be in a wrestling ring again.
You know what, Mr. Lawler? I've heard all these things you've been saying about me on television. You want to wrestle me? You want to wrestle me, Memphis style? All right, fine. I'm not afraid of you, Mr. Lawler, because let me tell you something. True, I only wrestle women, but I've wrestled women that are a lot bigger and stronger than you. Matter of fact, they're probably smarter than you because you don't have any brains. You're from Memphis, Tennessee. All you do is plow the fields and farm and the farmer. Is that how you talk to Memphis, Tennessee, Mr. Lawler? See, Mr. Lawler, you don't have any brains. I am from Hollywood. I have the brains. That's how I win my matches. I say the bigger they come, the harder they fall. You might be twice as big as me, but I've wrestled women that are twice as big as me, and I've mopped the floor with them. And that's what I'm going to do with you, Mr. Lawler. You challenged me to a wrestling match. I think you bit off a little more than you can chew.
Welcome to Reveal Way. My name is Wei Ting, back for the second week in a row without John Pollock on this episode, or this series.
How are you coping?
Awful.
It's a group effort, really, though, right?
I mean, to give you an idea of how terrible I'm doing. By the way, my guest host this evening, this morning, is Jason Agnew.
Hello. Hello.
The other half of my law brothers.
That's right. That's what you've done. You just filled the spots. Mouth, by the way, the episode last week I very much enjoyed with Dan Lavransky when he was there live talking about, what was it, Superclash?
Super Brawl 1.
Yep. Let's get those confused. I love the perspective. I will tell you right now, the Oz opening, the intro to Oz, as well as the part with the live bears, will be turned into promos for TSN Radio.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Both really, really great highlights.
Well, we have I'll forget his name. The guy who was in charge of WCW at the time.
Is it Hurd? Was it
Jim Hurd? We have Jim Hurd to thank for both of those. Anyway, just to give you an idea of how I am coping with John Pollock, I will say this is probably my sixth coffee in a 2 week period, which is unprecedented for me.
Yeah.
I usually drink maybe a coffee a month.
I feel as though I had to have a coffee when I walked into the Review Away studio. So we just left before this, went over to the little coffee shop next door, and I got a coffee. What I failed to do, though, is put cream or milk in my coffee. And then I came here. I'm like, well, Fight Network has a kitchen. Clearly they're going to have milk. No. But I have a black coffee in front of me, which I really have no interest in drinking.
Oh, so you're just holding your coffee.
I'm holding it, though, just to feel like Pollock at this point.
Yeah. So I don't know how – he takes his coffee strictly with milk.
Me too.
He doesn't drink cream. Well,
I don't get that.
Why?
I find that the flavor is different. The consistency is different. And I don't –
Once it's mixed in there with your coffee, do you really notice?
Yep. I can tell the difference between coffee with milk and coffee with cream.
Isn't milk just like watered down cream?
Okay.
Like,
so – and I guess there's less like fat in it. I'm just used to it from every morning. I have like – 2 cups of coffee with milk, right? Like 1% milk or something. So when I go into a restaurant, especially in the U.S., where you don't even have the milk option, at least in and for those of you listening, you know, in the U.S., in Canada, or at least in Toronto, you have like little things of milk or little things of coffee, or they ask you, do you want milk or coffee? In the States, it's it's sorry, milk or cream. In the States, just cream. You have to ask for milk. And sometimes they charge you for it.
And sometimes they look at you weird.
Yes.
I've seen that one. Milk and your coffee.
Yep.
Do you ever, like, are you one of those people that might put a few drops of honey in your coffee?
In my coffee?
In your coffee,
No,
yeah.
In my tea, sure. Oh, not in my coffee.
People don't do that with their coffee?
Maybe. People will
I just see coffee at Starbucks, or sorry, honey at Starbucks. I assume people drop that in their coffee.
Oh, I thought that was for tea. Oh, I used to have it
with probably tea. You're probably right.
I have put in, because I make smoothies now. Because I'm like running and stuff because I stay at home a lot and I figure I'm going to turn into a fat blob. But when I don't have milk sometimes, I'll put like chocolate almond milk into my coffee.
Almond milk is amazing.
Yeah, it's all right.
I used to drink a lot of soy milk, but then like you start reading so much stuff about soy.
It's not good, right?
Yeah. Apparently like there's a lot of chemicals in how it's refined. I don't know. I'm no expert, but I stopped drinking soy, but I switched to almond and it's delicious.
Yeah, I have almond. Sometimes I'll have coconut milk as well. Mm-hmm. I also enjoy the coconut water to make the smoothies.
We're a health
out of
podcast
that.
Now.
And that's what we're talking about. Yeah. This is what we do. And people are going to write in with all the mistakes we're actually making. Yeah. Oh, almond milk's not good. Oh, coconut milk's super fattening. I know. Shut up.
Yeah, shut
I
up.
Drink a lot of beer, so I run every day so I can drink more beer. Fuck off.
Yep.
There you go.
There you go. Well, that is our little coffee chat.
Yeah, that's the necessity off the top of this. Yeah.
In tribute to John Pollock.
Yeah. We're coming off Bound for Glory last night, right?
Three nights ago, you mean.
Sorry.
Yeah.
3 nights ago. Yeah.
That's the first rule of a review.
That's right. Let me do that again. We're coming off Bound for Glory 3 nights ago. I know you're not going to cut it out. It's fine.
We will.
Yeah, you're going to cut it out. Okay. It's like when Alvarez says he's going to cut something out. And we're back. I love when he does that.
Yes.
He's like, we're going to take a break. But there's
back.
No break.
Yeah.
I love
usually,
guys.
Like, if we do edit anything out, it's strictly, like, we just pick up. We try to make it seamless.
Yeah. Oh, you should see how much Braden screws up on the podcast, how much I have to cut out.
Oh, is that right?
No, it's not that much. But the first time he was on, we were having, because Braden and I doing What's Next, the new podcast.
Wonderful new podcast.
Thank you. We were having all the same problems that you and John went through in your early stages of Skype.
I didn't even realize you guys did that in Skype. I always thought, at least for a time, I thought you guys would record that at TSN Radio before
the
law.
No. We do it on Skype because we do it on – we try to do it on Thursdays. This week was a Friday. We try to do it on Thursdays like during – because we're both home. Braden works nights. I write. Mm-hmm. So we do that on Skype. So the first time I plugged in and made sure I was at my computer where the hub is right into the cable, right? Yeah. And Braden was using Wi-Fi. 3 times it cut out.
And did you realize that it was Braden on Wi-Fi and not you?
Yeah, it was Braden on Wi-Fi because I wasn't using Wi-Fi. I'm just like, dude, go plug in. We haven't had a problem since he plugged in. But I think – see, Braden's still – he's a young guy. He still lives at home. So I think he has
nothing
to do this like in – oh, yeah, so do you.
Yeah, nothing wrong
that's
with
right.
that.
That's right.
My parents live with me.
That's right. You're roommates.
Yes.
That's what we do on these podcasts. We just call people roommates and sometimes review fighting things with our roommates.
Yes.
So, so I think he has to do it, like, in his living room.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I'm...
Doesn't Braden, like, doesn't he produce music? Like, isn't he a big music guy?
Yeah, apparently.
So wouldn't he have, like, some type of audio booth or, like, soundproof room that he's got?
I don't know what he does.
No,
eh? So I guess not.
I'm waiting for the What's Next theme that he's going to write.
Yeah, why doesn't he do that?
Yeah, he should.
A
rap.
The funny thing is, when you guys talk about, sometimes I've heard you go, I wonder if that's going to be a promo on TSN. You know I'm listening, right?
And I don't know if you're listening
to totally
everything.
You totally know. I listen to everything that you guys do. So, but we can say this, and because that was kind of like subtle, will Braden find it? No, he didn't listen to a damn thing. he doesn't watch. He doesn't watch Impact. He sometimes watches Raw when he's at work. Uh-huh. And he doesn't listen to the rest of the stuff.
He sometimes watches Raw?
Not all the time.
But he buys all the shirts. He buys
everything.
Shirt, buys all the belts.
Yeah.
He's like one of the biggest, in terms of merchandising, one of the biggest fans I know. Yet I think
his middle name is Mark.
Yes.
But the fact of the matter is he doesn't like always watch the program. He used to be like a big TNA fan. It's just kind of like, I can't handle it anymore.
Yeah.
We were driving because Braden, a lame ass, Dan Lavransky, a lame ass, who do not drive. So I had to pick everyone up yesterday. Uh-huh. By the way, we stopped at Little Caesars on the way. Were you there for the Little Caesars debacle a couple weeks earlier?
I was not. I didn't even know those existed anymore.
Yeah, they do. They do. So a couple weeks ago, you know how they advertise, and I don't know what happens in the U.S., but here in Canada, they advertise Little Caesars, like on Raw, about that new deep dish pizza they had.
Okay.
So we normally order pizza when we watch the pay-per-views at TSN Radio. And I had the idea of like,
You're a major pizza connoisseur, though.
I just had pizza before we did this podcast, which was quite delightful. I love pizza. It's my favorite food. If I were to choose one food to eat for the rest of my life, it would be pizza. Nachos would be second. Pizza, number one. Again, this is why I run.
Now we're a food podcast.
There you go. We're going to get through all the different types of podcasts. So I had the idea, because we like to switch up, whether it's Pizza Nova, Pizza Pizza, or whatever here in town. And I was like, guys, let's get Little Caesars. And Mouth was so excited. He's like, yeah, those deep dish pizzas that I see on Raw each week. Yeah, let's get one of those. Oh. Those look good, right? Yeah. Oh. And then so I call Little Caesars and I'm like, yeah, I'd like to order, you know, for delivery. Like, Little Caesars doesn't deliver, sir. Oh. And I had to hang up the phone because we didn't have time to go get it.
Yeah. What pizza place doesn't deliver?
I was shocked. Also, Little Caesars just has mediums. But that's, I guess, their whole thing is like they keep – they only have one style of a pizza and they have – you know, and they're deep dish and they don't deliver, so they keep costs down. So – but I turned around and told Mouth this and he was like, I've never – it was like a disappointed child at Christmas that didn't get a gift. He was so sad. So the next week, which was 3 days ago when we watched Bound for Glory, mm-hmm. I picked up Mouth. Then I picked up Braden, and I figured out where there was a Little Caesars in between Braden's house and TSN and picked up a deep dish plus two other pizzas and then went to TSN. Boom.
Boom.
So we tried the deep dish.
And what was Mouth's reaction?
He was super excited about when I told him I had planned the Little Caesars route.
Oh, okay.
And then we ate it, and it's kind of like garlic bread with pizza toppings on it. It's good. Yeah. You know, it's a little different.
Yeah.
I would put that into the rotation of our pizza buying for pay-per-view nights.
What is your top pizza?
Vesuvio.
Number one.
In my life.
Vesuvio's, for people who are from out of town, it's really just a mom-and-pop shop,
yes.
Isn't it? That exists in Toronto near the Junction area.
I think it's been around since the 60s, though.
Really? Wow.
It's been around a long, long time. And yeah, it's in the Junction. Look up Vesuvio on Dundas West. It's great. They use like bread dough and make pizza with it, and it's my favorite.
What is your number one chain?
Oh, that's a good question. Lately, I've been digging Pizza Nova. When I talked to Mickey James, though, we had a discussion about Papa John's in the U.S., and I do like Papa John's as well, from the bits and pieces that I had about it. Why did you giggle at that?
I'm just laughing because, man, you probably... It's totally understandable. I just don't know anybody who has thought about this topic for this much.
Oh, no.
You clearly have had many conversations with yourself probably about, what's my number one? What's my number two?
Well, the thing is, we get so much. I eat, like, my default when I'm out and I go out and party and whatever, and then I'm going and trying to, like, you know, I'm going to be super hungover. Let's eat something before I go to bed. Number one thing, pizza slice on the way home.
What is the nastiest pizza that you've had?
The first thing that popped into my mind was I was in Boston, and I was shooting Conventioneers, and I think there's something called New York Pizza. If Martin Foster is listening, he's going to know this. I think it's called New York Pizza or something like that. It's in the Entertainment District in Boston, and it is so greasy. But there was nowhere else that I knew to go, so I passed by this every night of the three nights I was there and got this disgusting, greasy piece of pizza. I guess it's kind of like the equivalent to Big Slice here in Toronto.
I like Big Slice.
I don't mind Big Slice, but I mean, it's the late night joint that you know is open
right in
downtown Toronto, and you can always go to Big Slice. I don't mind Big Slice. I find it too doughy around the crust. They don't put like enough topping and enough sauce on, so you get a lot of crust at the end, and it tends to dry out because they leave them out. I have thought about this a lot.
Yeah, out of 10, what do you rate that?
Big Slice?
Yeah.
I give Big Slice like a 6.5.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, 6.5, 7. And I would give like Pizza Pizza a 6. I think I'd give like Nova a 7.5. But sometimes their pizza's a little bit dry as well. Vesuvio's like a 9.5 because I always want to leave room for that little something that's better somewhere in my
life.
What
will be the 10?
I don't know. Go ahead and tweet at AgnewJason. In particular, in Toronto, for places to try, because I don't get to travel as much as I used to. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
Are you a fan of, like, the Mama's Pizza and also the Pizza Aiolo? You don't like that?
Pizza Aiolo, I love the Godfather dish, which is their deep dish there. Or is it the Soprano or the Calabrese there, which is the one with sausage, tomato, and onion. I really enjoy that one there. And the Godfather's great. It's the deep dish. I hate Mama's Pizza. I don't know what they put on it. I think it's thin. It's greasy and it doesn't taste good. I don't know if it's the cheese or whatever. I can't stand it.
Have you had like authentic Italian pizza? Like the pizza that you eat with a knife and fork?
Yeah, I have.
Are you a fan
of that? I think that a lot of, like when I go to restaurants and I'll go to like nice restaurants with my family to like Italian restaurants and everyone else is getting like their pastas and stuff. If pizza's on the menu, I'm ordering pizza.
Yeah.
So I've had those. I don't often like them all that much, but to me, a small pizza is going to be better than any pasta dish I can have.
Hmm.
And I've had them, but I'll take Vesuvio's over anything.
So there's not really a part of you that's interested in going to Italy to try like real authentic Italian pizza?
Oh, I would totally be down for that. Absolutely. And I'd be going like all over the place just eating pizza everywhere if that was the case. But I do want to go to Chicago because I haven't had authentic deep dish pizza and Chicago is really known for that. Mm-hmm. I want to go to Chicago for that. And I also want to go to Chicago to go to Second City there. And I want to go to Lisa Marie Veron's restaurant that she has in Chicago as well.
Her pizza restaurant.
Is it a pizza restaurant? Because they have like other weird stuff there as well. They have like a peanut butter burger, which I was like, what? That sounds so intriguing.
Sounds disgusting.
No, I would be all over that. I make a peanut butter soup, peanut butter chicken soup, which is phenomenal.
Okay.
If I do say so myself.
I believe it is a pizza shop.
I'd be all over that
way. Yeah. She has a pizza shop. Doesn't somebody else, some other wrestler have a pizza shop that's open?
I'm not sure. Nothing pops into my head. I know that, you know, Abdul the Butcher has this thing. Abby's. I think Mouth has been there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he does.
And who, remember the guy who managed Umaga?
Alejandro Estrada.
He had a steak place, but it closed down. That's from what I remember, the wrestlers with... Oh, and in Niagara Falls. Didn't Angelo Mosca have a place there? Or there was a wrestling-themed place in Niagara Falls as well. I don't know if it's still there, but it was like a pasta joint.
Right.
Maybe they had pizza. I don't know.
Maybe.
I didn't go.
Well, we've, I think, exhausted this pizza conversation.
I can keep going.
For 14:30. for more of that, I'm sure you can tune into NXT where Brayden will be able to chime in.
He took me... Do you want to keep
going? Let's keep going.
Brayden,
let's hit
Brayden,
15.
Brayden took... We went out this past Thursday... And for some reason, we started the night with Chinese food. I think we talked about this on What's Next this week. And can you know, in a way, you were out with us, you know, back in the day.
I'm Chinese.
And still sometimes,
yeah, you're
going to
ask me a question about Chinese food?
No, you're not
food?
Chinese. You're Vietnamese, are you?
I'm everyone. I'm everyone.
Oh, okay. Well, as Freddie Blassie referred
we're
to it,
same.
Oriental.
Yeah.
In dinner with my breakfast with
Buddha.
Blassie.
You call me Buddha.
Buddha.
Just like Freddie Blassie.
We'll get there. Anyway, he took me out for Chinese food first before a night of drinking. Never do that. That's a terrible idea.
Chinese food before drinking.
It's an after drinking thing.
Yeah, yeah, because of all the grease.
Yeah.
Or does the grease help? Does the grease not help wick away the liquor into, I don't know,
I woke up so hungover the next day, hated it.
Into
Whereas
that.
If I have it at the end of the night, I just wake up kind of full the next day.
Were you eating a lot of rice? Because maybe the rice would help.
That yeah.
Not so much the you know any of the greasy dishes.
Yeah, I had a bit of rice with the terrible General Tsao that we had there, and it was just not the regular place that we go to, Hongxing. It was what New Ho King on Spadina, where Brayden goes, and I give that a thumbs down. I got to school that boy.
Ooh.
That boy needs to learn a little bit about broadcasting and where to go eat in Toronto.
Yes, yes.
He's only been to Sneaky D's a couple times.
Well, he might be thankful for that. I've been hearing rumors that they're going to close that place down.
No, it's an institution.
I know, but just because of all the health violations.
I'm sure. Well, I haven't seen Sneaky D's closed down. Like, because we have it gets checked by the Ministry of Health here in Toronto for, you know, cleanliness and stuff. And I haven't seen it closed down. Whereas we used to go to Hongxing and it was closed down a couple times. That and for shootings as well.
Yeah. With those things, I prefer not to know. I prefer not to know what exactly
just
goes on.
Just enjoy the flavor, no matter what's in it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Like John is doing with pork knuckles now in Russia.
Yeah, that's right. He's been quite experimental on this
excursion.
For
John?
Yeah.
100%
pork
he has.
Knuckle. Yeah, and I think the thing about John is like, I think he's afraid to try things, but once he tries it, he starts liking things.
Yep.
He felt the same way about dumplings.
Yep.
Now I think he's a big dumpling guy.
I believe it.
Well, we will get to more food and restaurant talk in a bit.
That's
when
true.
We talk about my breakfast with Blassie.
We can talk about great breakfast places to go.
Okay.
Okay.
Sure.
I would write that down.
Write all this down.
I
write all this down. This is going to be the longest podcast of all
time. Okay. I got. Hold on. I got my. my phone. I'm going to write notes in my phone of things that I want to talk about. I should turn it on. I had it turned off. I was being polite. Okay, so let's get into this.
Andy Kaufman. I'm from Hollywood. This is a documentary about Andy Kaufman's exploits in the pro wrestling world. And going into this, I really didn't know anything about Andy Kaufman. I had a lot of interest, of course, but he was way before, kind of before my time.
Mine as well, really.
Died before I was even born, I think.
He died in 1984. Or I think I read this morning, which, I mean, I was six. I really didn't get to experience any of this, you know, firsthand. Plus, he was primarily in the Memphis territory as well, right? Which we didn't get exposed to, you know, here living in Toronto. So,
but Jay, being like, sorry to cut you off, but being like, you know, as ingrained in the comedy scene as you are, you know, not being on TV and also locally doing a lot of stuff for Comedy Bar and whatnot, how do you think his reputation has, lived up to, you know, up to this point?
Andy Kaufman, I think it's actually unfair to call him a comedian because I don't think that when he was performing a lot of his stuff, it's not like he went up and did stand-up. It's not like his dream was to be on Taxi, you know, and to be that character. He had to be forced into that. Whereas, you know, if you're a stand-up or if you're an improviser and a performer on stage, your dream is to get a sitcom. Like, that's where the money is. You want to be on TV. My dream would be to get that. Isn't that weird, though?
Like, I mean, you spend your whole career writing your own jokes, and your dream will be to be on some other show reading somebody else's jokes that probably aren't as funny as what you can come up with yourself.
Well, it's twofold, right? Because there's that, maybe getting on that show allows you to do your own project, or you walk in with your own project where it's based, like, you know, Louis C.K., what he does on FX. Like, that's him, you know? He does what he wants to.
That is so rare, isn't it?
It is extremely rare. And, I mean, I had that as well. If you look at the show that I did called The Conventioneers, that was my creation. I grabbed Matt for that and said, hey, let's give this a try. And I'm not saying it was full of writing, but the freedom was completely there. I was not supervised for that. I was my own, you know, my own character, my own writer, and my own censor.
That's the beauty of Canadian low-budget cable TV, isn't it?
And then I go on and I do something called Splat-A-Lot now, where the opportunity to actually improvise and not read a script on that was almost non-existent, aside from the fact that the supervising producer was a giant wrestling fan and asked me to throw in like a Ring-A-Ding-Dong Dandy or a Don't You Dare Miss It got written into the script, or mention luchadors or mention Rey Mysterio.
You find a wrestling fan in any walk of life.
Wrestling fans find me in any walk of life, as weird as it is. I mean, and I'm sure you've been out too, Wei, where you're out in a weird circumstance. Someone says, oh, that wrestling, oh, The Law? You know, like that happens to me all the time.
Not that often with me, but
yeah. I find it.
You're way more popular than I am.
I've been doing it longer. Yeah. That's the only reason why.
Andy Kaufman.
So getting back to, you know, Andy Kaufman and not being a comedian. I think he's a performance artist because I don't think that when he went up and did a lot of his stage stuff, it wasn't considered funny. He was – what I found watching I'm From Hollywood and Breakfast with Blassie is I sat there going, who's in on this and who's not?
Yes.
What is Kaufman just doing by himself? What is he committing to? And he really committed his whole life to being this character. And the value with Kaufman and the way that he's looked at now after he's died is that he just didn't give a shit about what anyone thought. He was experimenting with things that he wanted to do, whether they were success or whether they failed. He didn't care. He wanted to try it. He did it. He didn't want to be like anyone else, and he committed to it. Absolutely committed to it, not caring what the mainstream media thought of him. He just wanted to do things, and he went out and did that. And that blows my mind because, yeah, there's stuff that I like to try and like to do, but my next thought is, well, what if YTV sees that? And they're thinking of another season, but boom, they don't want me to, you know, be doing something crazy, right? Mm-hmm. And even to me, you know, the wrestling stigma has both helped and hindered doing a wrestling show because people will look at wrestling and go, come on, what do you do that for, right? But Kaufman just went out and did whatever he wanted, whenever he wanted, and it was so calculated.
Yes, it was. He, to me, I actually watched The Man on the Moon before doing this because I was completely unfamiliar. And you know what? If you are in the same boat as me, I found this documentary to be an incredible companion piece to Man on the Moon, because Man on the Moon, the 1999 Jim Carrey, basically a biography of Andy Kaufman, and going through a lot of the monumental occasions in his life. To me, what I gathered from watching, you know, everything, learning about this guy, is that he was the ultimate troll. He was a guy who basically wanted to elicit a reaction from people, whether good or bad. He wanted to make people confused, and in that confusion, he probably found a lot of humor in it for himself.
Yeah.
He wanted to make himself laugh. In the process, if people got in on the joke, they probably find it amusing too. But
he didn't care who was in on it. You know, if we look at – getting right to I'm from Hollywood. So looking at the interviews in this, let's go over this first. Who's in on it and who's not in those interviews?
What do you mean?
Because they had – Tony Danza, I have it written here.
Mary Lou Henner.
Tony Danza, Mary Lou Henner, Robin Williams, Bob Zmuda, and George Shapiro are all interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
Who's in your opinion? And Lance Russell. In on the work of him in wrestling. In on the fact that this is basically a fictional documentary that we're looking at here.
Yes, yes. That I think is one of the first things we should note, is that I was going into this documentary expecting something more along the lines of, you know, a traditional documentary with more insight into the personality of Andy Kaufman, why he would do this. In fact, it really wasn't. It was almost like a recap of exactly what had happened.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to keep in mind that Andy Kaufman himself started this documentary before his death. It was completed by his then-girlfriend after his death. So even if the people involved, let's say Tony Danza, were to give an incredibly honest assessment of Andy Kaufman, I would have a feeling maybe things like that would be edited out of the documentary because they would want to keep kayfabe essentially inside this documentary.
Well, I looked at it, and in reading a little bit as well, you know, obviously Lawler was in on everything,
He
completely scripted out. It was all planned. And Jimmy Hart was a big part of that too.
Yep.
And I do remember talking a bit to Jimmy Hart when he was up here doing stuff with Byte TV. Nothing notable came out of the conversation, but just talking about the background of Andy Kaufman and how he got involved. Lance Russell in on it as well, clearly, you know, all scripted. Robin Williams, completely in on it, because Robin Williams also participated in some of Andy Kaufman's stage shows as well. At one point, there was one show that I read about where Andy invited his grandmother up on stage completely done up in makeup, and halfway through, Robin Williams pulls off the mask.
Oh, is that right?
And it's Robin Williams up on stage.
Like Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah, exactly, right? Andy Kaufman inspired Mrs. Doubtfire, apparently. But I'm looking at Mary Lou Henner's interview.
Yeah.
This woman was clueless
as
to what was going on. Tony Danza? No idea what was happening.
And those two are curious as well, because Tony Danza doesn't even appear in Man on the Moon. And I went on to read a lot of opinions afterwards. A lot of people saying Tony Danza didn't really like Andy Kaufman very much.
I could see that.
He annoyed him on the show. And so I find it fascinating that he was one of the people interviewed on this documentary about him.
Yeah, but I could totally see a conflict with those two. I mean, look at Danza's background. Mm-hmm. He's an athlete, right, that gets into acting and stuff. Wasn't that how he came about? Or something like that. Didn't he do some amateur boxing as well?
Yeah, I think he did a bit of that.
Yeah.
But even, like, I'll be honest, if I was working in an office with an Andy Kaufman, I would probably despise this guy too.
You bet.
I would think – I mean, save for the fact that obviously the guy, you know, was very calculated, but often he would – be using people as the butt of his jokes. And if I'm in a working environment, I probably find this guy incredibly annoying trying to be funny.
In Canada, and by no means am I comparing the level that they've achieved or the genius that they have to Andy Kaufman, but two people I would throw into this category of people who try these type of stunts.
Tom Green,
Kenny Hotz. Remember when we did – were you there for the podcast we did with Kenny Hotz?
I was not there, actually.
That jackass just came in and trolled the entire time. And I'm like – because the first thing I said – we did this show back in the day called Byte Radio, again, paired with Byte TV. And Kenny and Spenny was bought for a Byte to air as a back-to-back companion with Conventioneers.
Mm-hmm.
And Kenny wanted to be on the podcast and brought him in. And my whole thought was, we've both done shows where it's two guys, one is versus, one is together versus others, right? But I'm like, there's comparisons to be made here. And I went in basically saying, hey, Kenny, I would like your advice. Conventioneers is still going. You guys have had tremendous success with Kenny versus Spenny. What can you lend to me now to be more successful with conventioneers. And he's like, you can't be. We're geniuses. And how about you try scripting your show? You're an idiot. I was like, so that's how this is going to go. You're going to troll me the entire show. You're a complete dick. That's not what I wanted out of
funny,
this interview.
Though. Kind of funny.
But that's what I mean, right? I can never work with Kenny Hotz.
Yeah.
That's insane, right? Couldn't work with
Tony
Green.
On the other hand, was great.
What a great guy.
Yeah.
What a just an amazing, amazing guy who Spenny, I was sitting at home on Christmas Day, and actually these episodes of Classic Wrestling.
Yeah, you should talk a little about
so,
that.
So Classic Wrestling, we got the tapes from Memphis, actually, from the late Corey Macklin, and we bought them for both a joint purchase for Fight Network and Byte Television. And then I went through all the tapes, tried to theme episodes, because we had stuff with like Macho Man Randy Savage, Rick Rude, in like their young days.
Amazing footage that the WWE didn't own.
That's
at
right.
the time.
So I was able to like, you know, take these out and make compilations, and I would come on in between and kind of give a background on the performer and go like, here's a treat, here's a match with blank, here's what this angle was, and here's why this match is happening, boom. And these, we did a marathon. It was on Boxing Day. We did a wrestling marathon on Boxing Day on Byte, and I get this email while I'm sitting at home, Spencer Rice. Just kind of like, well, that's, I know that name, that's Benny. And I click on it, and he's like, I just want to say I'm sitting at home and I'm watching wrestling right now, and this is amazing wrestling, and thank you for putting this together, Spenny. I'm like, what is happening
That's
here?
Cool, yeah.
He's a huge wrestling fan from that era. Mm-hmm. And then we just formed a relationship, and he was on The Surf, as you know, Wei. You were shooting that show, and we've kept in touch ever since then.
Cool.
And he's a really genuinely nice person. I would work with him, no problem.
But it's interesting you bring that up, because I don't doubt that even Kenny Hotz himself is probably a bit of a, at least a little bit of a wrestling fan. And I think there's a lot of crossover, as I'm sure you've already seen, between the comedy world and pro wrestling world. And it's clear to see why somebody like Andy Kaufman would gravitate so much towards the world of pro wrestling, because what other venue in life can you toy with
the audience?
The way you can in pro wrestling? What other avenue can you stay in character 24/7 and have it be part of your role, part of your job to do so?
And Kaufman would do this on stage. He would go out and specifically try to alienate his audience. He would try to give them
the Great Gatsby.
That's right, the Great Gatsby, where he'd was that the one where he'd do?
He would at least in the film, the way they portrayed it was that he was doing a stand-up show. This audience was only calling for him to do what's the character on Taxi?
Latka,
this foreign character that he's become famous for on Taxi. So this audience didn't want to hear his actual jokes. They all wanted him to do this impression. So Andy Kaufman decides to fuck with these guys, pulls out the Great Gatsby, and in his English accent proceeds to read the entire book front to end.
And no, because when the audience got really rowdy, there are certain times where he'd just go, perhaps you'd just like to listen to some music with me. And they'd be like, yeah! And they'd pull out a record player, and it would be him reading the Great Gatsby on the record player. Like, now you look back at that and you go, what balls to alienate an entire audience by doing that. And there's very few performers who would do that, but you're right. That translates to a heel in pro wrestling.
It's
and
exactly
that's where there's value to doing a character like that. So gravitating towards it made, you know, perfect sense for Kaufman and what he aspired to do in his career.
Mm-hmm. And this documentary, I found the strongest suit of it was the ability that they had to gather all the footage, all of this footage, especially if you started off watching the Man on the Moon like I did, to see the real clips that the movie was based on was really cool for me. I went on YouTube afterwards and decided to watch the Friday's debacle, to watch him, do Mighty Mouse, to see the real version of the guy doing all these things that Jim Carrey was basically impersonating.
Sorry to interrupt, but you mentioned Jim Carrey there. Yeah. On set, like, Jim Carrey became a method actor for this movie. Do you know this story?
Yeah.
Where he would not answer to Jim. He would only answer to being called Andy. Mm-hmm. And he dove right into this role. And
it shows, man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, as far as impressions go, like, this was, like, that, at least that movie on Man on the Moon, he was fantastic as Andy Kaufman. Anyway, I found that to be the strongest point of this documentary was the fact that they had basically all the Memphis wrestling footage that they could want, all the back and forth promos between Kaufman and Lawler that they cut out into a pretty nice little sequence. The funniest part of just how natural he was in this heel role. You know what I mean? Like, let's say he's brought into the WWE today. Like, how often have we seen these celebrity GMs come in, want nothing to do with wrestling, mm-hmm. do a piss poor job of it because they think that, oh, this is pro wrestling. I'm way above this. I'm an actual actor. Meanwhile, this guy, Andy Kaufman, came in with a passion for pro wrestling and basically was tried to be as creative and tried to be as – I don't know. He seemed to have a lot of fun, but at the same time, he took it really, really seriously to the point where he did a great job as a heel.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was the number one heel in Memphis at that time and did the program with Lawler. And, you know, everyone remembers just out of that program, of course, they remember the Letterman stunt that was done, right, where the two of them were on Letterman together. And I don't know.
We should talk a bit about that, because I'm assuming a lot of people listening probably don't know anything about him, don't know anything about that Letterman stunt. So basically, first of all, Andy Kaufman started off wrestling women.
Yes.
Because his whole thing was that he wanted to play heel, but unfortunately, as a skinny guy, how is he going to play heel against, you know, these giant wrestlers? Well, who's somebody he can beat? Women. And so he would have these. As far as I know, were they shoots?
See, I thought about they. I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know, but I would guess that once it became involved in Memphis, everything was complete work, right?
Perhaps.
And you have, you know, stiffs out there in the audience. At his comedy shows, I'd assume they'd have to be works.
At some of them, yeah, I'd assume. I don't know either.
See, I don't
that's
know.
The thing. I don't know if we'll ever know.
Nope.
But Andy Kaufman started off, you know, with these open challenges to women in the audience. He would cut the most... I think, you know,
misogynistic
to a wrestling fan, they're pretty like common
now.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's just like an old school. Women are meant to be in the kitchen cooking and cleaning.
Yeah. I'm not, you know, he would say things like, I'm not saying women aren't good at anything in the kitchen and making sandwiches and cleaning floors. They can clean, you know, clean the clock out with men. But as far as wrestling goes, men are the best. And so you have Andy Kaufman's whole run as the intergender champion of the world. And at one point, Jerry Lawler trains a female woman by the name of Foxy, who nearly takes over and defeats Andy Kaufman in a match. But Andy Kaufman still somehow prevails over this woman. And then, in fact, after... One of the funniest promos was he obviously got a plant. He cuts a promo on Lawler, you know, takes down this 6 foot tall woman, pins her, and continues to smash her face on the floor. And I just thought he just did a great job. And then so Jerry Lawler was fighting for this woman, of course, and that's how that whole feud with Lawler began. They booked basically a match that looked like it had some incredible heat surrounding it.
Oh, man, yeah.
Jerry Lawler versus Andy Kaufman. And following that match, Jerry Lawler delivers a pile driver, two pile drivers to Andy Kaufman. Andy Kaufman gets carried away in a cast. And so they have somehow a meeting on The Late Show with David Letterman, the 12:30 slot back then. And this is when I don't think Letterman was in on the joke.
He wasn't. Letterman was not in on the joke. And I don't know where I heard this. I can't remember if it was from Jimmy Hart or if it was from an interview I heard with Bob Zmuda on Mark Maron's podcast. But
Bob Zmuda, who's his longtime collaborator.
Right, who played Tony Clifton sometimes, which is one of Andy's alternate personalities as well. From what I know of this, or what I had heard, is that they had talked about it, but they had decided against doing the slap on the show. And they got out there, and all of a sudden, there's a moment where they make eye contact, and both of them realize that this is going in the direction where this slap is really going to make it, and they just went with it, you know, on scene, just had it happen, and Letterman completely not in on it, but these two were.
I noticed, I went to watch that clip afterwards of them on Letterman, and I noticed it was towards the end of the interview as Letterman was about to wrap up, and I almost got the feeling like, Lawler was probably thinking, well, if I don't do it now, we won't get a chance to do it later. So he went ahead, slapped Andy Kaufman, and that kind of became TV history.
It's huge. It was, you know, and especially at this time, because that would have been in 1982, I think that happened. And what a lot of people don't realize about this entire angle is Kaufman went to Vince McMahon Sr. first.
Yes.
And that's baffling to me, considering what his son is like. Vince McMahon Jr. will, you know, the Vince McMahon that we know now, will do anything, anything to get himself recognized in mainstream media, and has this giant chip on his shoulder that he's just wrestling and can't penetrate into the mainstream media. Mm-hmm. Whereas Vince McMahon Sr. said, oh, we don't want anything to do with Andy Kaufman. No, thank you. We do wrestling.
It's funny to think about that, because who would have been in the Jerry Lawler role had Kaufman decided to go with Vince Sr.?
So it would have been 1981 this was pitched. So you got it. Who was the big heel in that territory at that time?
Who was the big baby face at the time?
Oh, sorry. It would have been the big baby face.
Yeah, it would have been Bruno or Backlund.
Backlund or Bruno, one of the two, I guess. Yeah. So, because it was that's pre-Hogan.
It's just hard for me to imagine anybody but Jerry Lawler in this role, because I thought Lawler was fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
In everything that he did. In the back-and-forth promos that he cut with Andy Kaufman, just as a babyface. I think a lot of people, especially of my generation, they only recognize Jerry Lawler as, you know, puppies and, you know, not much else in recent years. But back then, man, this was the man. This was the man.
Completely. And, you know, especially, you know, in that territory in Memphis. And wow, did he work this? And and they had just huge publicity. Imagine that way. Imagine this is a territory. This is not national. This is the Memphis territory who somehow finds their way on to the Late Late Show with David Letterman because of Kaufman's notoriety. Mm-hmm. So they get national exposure. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Just brilliant, especially for that time where really you didn't have all that many celebrities being involved in wrestling. That really wasn't until Junior came in and started doing WrestleMania, and then it was like celebrity, 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 so we can make this national and make money.
Do you ever get the sense that like Vince Jr. kind of downplays this whole aspect of Jerry Lawler's career, because you never hear it mentioned in WWF TV?
Nope.
Do they have the footage now? Do they own the Memphis footage now?
I'm not sure.
I think there's a whole thing about the Corey Macklin situation.
Yeah, I have
that
no
came
idea.
Up recently. But anyway, this is like some incredible pro wrestling history, but you'd never even hear them really make mention of it with Jerry Lawler. Even like as Lawler was filming Man on the Moon, I don't think they made a big deal out of it.
I don't remember anything, though.
Yeah. And so I often wonder, you know, could there have been any
bitterness?
Like, yeah. Or yeah, it could just have been Vince saying, oh, that's kind of that Southern stuff. We have nothing to do with that.
You can't deny this, though. When you get Letterman involved and when you get Andy Kaufman involved, that's not that Southern stuff. Mm-hmm. That's his dad pretty much making a mistake, making a complete mistake to not do this stunt. And that's, I think that was it. It was a stunt. It wasn't wrestling. And with McMahon's all about stunts. Junior, that is.
Yep.
All about stunts. And maybe this is, you know, not wanting to admit to the fact that his dad just completely, you know, dropped the ball on this.
Yeah. If Vince, like today, found somebody who was this game, like a celebrity who was this game to do this much and like be as involved in pro wrestling 100% as Andy Kaufman was, I think he'd have a wet dream, you know, over what he could do with the guy.
For
like
sure.
So any other thoughts on this documentary? I mean, for the most part, what did you think of it as a viewing experience for 1 hour?
I'm glad it was only an hour. That was enough to tell the story.
I definitely got the sense that, I mean, they started off, you know, the wrestling with the woman stuff was very amusing. And then also the match with Lawler was quite epic. Mm-hmm. But then I kind of got the sense that the feud kind of dragged on a little too long.
Might have. Because they did the angle then where they had Jimmy Hart and Andy Kaufman facing each other.
Yeah.
But it turns out it was a whole ruse to get back at Lawler. And I think... because when the documentary finished, I was like, wait a minute. Did Lawler not get his win back at the end? Did you read about this?
No, I didn't.
Because I tried to read into the fact that, like, this is Lawler's the guy in Memphis. He's got to come out on top at the end of this feud. And Kaufman goes back to Hollywood, goes away,
it
right?
It just shows Andy swerved this guy, Jerry Lawler, made him look like an idiot.
Yeah.
Beat him up and then went his way.
But I think what happened is Kaufman got sick.
I see.
And was diagnosed with cancer. As you all know, Kaufman died, and I think it was like he's 35 or 36. He was super young when he died of cancer. And I think that there was more to do with the angle, but he got diagnosed.
Had he not completely exited? Oh, you mean like by the time he got sick, he just exited
Yes.
Wrestling, of course.
Yes, I think that it, because the end of this documentary is Kaufman once again getting his revenge on Lawler, and then boom, he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not the babyface winning. That's not right, especially for that time period.
Mm-hmm.
Lawler's
mm-hmm.
the one staying.
Yeah.
So that's bizarre.
Another thing I really loved about seeing some of this footage was what makes a lot of this footage to me is all the shots of the audience,
the
people in the crowd, especially the women and like the old ladies, just like this incredible look of hatred at this guy who is shouting all these terrible things. And like these days, like we just look at that and we laugh because we know it's all intentional. But definitely like the reactions that this guy was getting was definitely like a heel's dream.
And he also had the filmmakers go out and shoot streeters as well with people. I don't think those are scripted. I think that those were actually people in Memphis who bought into this angle and hated Andy Kaufman. Mm-hmm. And because, as we know, we can still find those people today who buy
into
wrestling.
Oh, for sure we can. In your opinion, do you think his involvement with wrestling, like he had a run for over a year.
Yeah.
Right? With Memphis.
I think it was a couple,
Yeah, doing all that stuff. Do you think that it harmed his career in Hollywood?
I don't think we can say yes or no because he passed away so quickly thereafter. So, obviously it pulled him away from what he could have been doing, but Andy Kaufman didn't want to be on Taxi. He took it for the paycheck, and it was advised to him that go do this because it will push your personality, it would push your profile up, mm-hmm. right? And the character of Latka was based on something he was doing on stage. Mm-hmm. And there was no original role in Taxi. For Latka, they basically gave it to Andy after seeing that role, and they wrote Latka in as a multiple personality disorder character so he could also play other characters on the show.
Tony Clifton.
Yeah, did Clifton appear on Taxi as well?
At least in Man on the Moon, that was one of his demands, was that Tony Clifton gets 3 appearances.
And he actually had... I think he had Tony Clifton's contract negotiated separate from Andy Kaufman.
Right.
And Tony Clifton, I read about this morning, flipped out on set and was removed from the premises. And he had the company.
They reenacted that
Did they?
Yeah.
And then they had the company, issue a statement of, Tony Clifton no longer allowed.
Yeah.
But his friend Andy Kaufman is still welcome.
Like, that stuff never even made it to air. Like, that was just him having a blow up for his own amusement, I'm sure. So that just kind of tells you a little bit about the psyche of this man. Basically, just staying in character at any instant, never breaking character.
Yep.
And that was his philosophy, it seemed, which made him a perfect fit for the world of pro wrestling.
Especially in that era, in the kayfabe era,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
I often wonder, though, because, I went on and I read not just like the Wikipedia entry, but I surfed around and tried to read things about this, but I don't know what's true and what's not in anything that I'm reading.
Yeah.
Because this could have just been Bob Zmuda, who worked with Andy Kaufman and is still alive today.
Mm-hmm.
And he ran Comic Relief. He was very well known for that. And I think he's a producer. He had something to do with A&E as well. Anyhow, I've heard him interviewed and half his interview is complete bullshit.
Right.
On Mark Maron, just half of it, I'm just like, well, that never happened. That wasn't right. But Maron was buying into all of it because he didn't know anything about wrestling, right?
Yes, yes.
So, but a lot of it was bullshit. So I'm thinking, if he's feeding out this, all it takes is a broken telephone scenario of Zmuda to say something, it to be reported by someone else and reported again, and then all of a sudden you're reading it on something that's supposed to be completely factual. Mm. But so, I'm talking about this, but I wasn't there.
Yeah.
We weren't there. So what's real and what's not, I don't really know.
Yeah, I don't know if any of us will, and I'm sure that's the intent.
Yep.
But ultimately the point is, are you intrigued? Are you entertained?
Oh, yeah.
And that's really what this is. I thought overall the doc, it was a really good recap of his run in Memphis in the pro wrestling world. Some great footage and, like I said, a great companion piece to maybe another documentary on Andy Kaufman or, Man on the Moon, of course. But I wouldn't go in with this just as, your only experience of Andy Kaufman. I would say get something else about him first. Learn a little bit more about the guy before you can really appreciate this one.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
What do you rate it?
Rating this? I don't know if I can rate it because there's no... normally to rate something, you compare it to something else.
Mm-hmm.
What do you compare this to?
Just as a viewing experience. I mean, even with your background, knowing what you do know, like, did you enjoy yourself while watching it? Would you recommend it to somebody with a similar background of context?
I guess you know what this is like watching. This bizarre enough, this is like watching a WWE documentary because It's what Kaufman wanted you to know about his – it's a recap. It's there's no behind the scenes here, right?
No.
You're not getting any of the real stuff. And to be honest, that's what I'm really interested in.
Yeah, me too.
So I didn't realize that, and I don't think you did either going into this. So I was disappointed in that aspect of it. I don't know, like a 7? I don't know.
I think it about a 6, you know.
6, 7, not much.
Yeah, like I said, just a really good – basically an hour-long highlight reel instead of a doc. Don't go in thinking a documentary. I should also take this opportunity to the reason I even have a copy of this DVD is because of a listener named Fraser Lyons who decided to send me and John a copy of this after hearing about us talk about our interest in Andy Kaufman. So thank you very much, Fraser, who sent along a wonderful note with this DVD as well. And second part of our review.
We're going to talk about our favorite brunch places in the city.
Yes, okay.
Because it's Breakfast with Blassie we're eventually going to talk about. Where do you like to go?
My favorite
brunch? What do you like for brunch first? Like, what do you aim for as your ideal brunch?
I don't eat brunch.
Like, okay, breakfast.
Breakfast, yeah.
Okay, well, I have...
Do you actually eat brunch? Like, how do you distinguish the two?
A little bit later in the day. And it's brunch is like an outing where you specifically go to meet with someone to chat, I find. And I tell you...
You could do that with breakfast.
I guess so, but breakfast just seems earlier. It's like something you scarf down to start your day. Brunch is more like an enjoyable experience.
Okay.
That's my take
on
it.
So this would be my brunch with Blassie.
Yeah, exactly. This is not a quick in-and-out thing, right? Yeah. This is
a dessert.
A brunch.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's more so my brunch with Blassie. That's how it should have been named.
Well, I don't really do that. I just go and eat. But my favorite breakfast place is actually in the Scarborough area. I don't know if you've ever been.
Yeah.
Markham Station up at Markham and Shepherd.
Okay.
It's, you know, just kind of a – in Scarborough these days, at least where I live, you'll probably like – These places are kind of few and far in between because, you know, it's mainly like Chinese restaurants these days. But if you go a little further south, Markham Station, just, you know, $5 3-egg special, 3 eggs, which is probably
good.
A lot, but you know, delicious. And just a nice little environment, simple. Like, you can't really mess up breakfast too
much. Oh, you can.
Oh, can you?
Oh,
well,
you
tell.
Can. Well, it's because I used to, again, with conventioners or with door-to-door, travel all over the place, right? So all over North America, one of my favorite things to do was go get breakfast and or brunch, but like a good breakfast. And there's a place that I found in Calgary, Alberta, and it's called... Oh, my goodness. Hold on. I just thought of this now, and I'm trying to think. Nelly's. Nelly's Cosmic Cafe in Calgary is great.
Cosmic Cafe?
Yeah. I don't know why.
Like, it's just is that like space?
Don't know. Not really. She's like, the owner is like this Ukrainian lady. So, but I don't know why.
I've never heard of breakfast being described as cosmic.
Cosmic?
Yeah.
Now you have.
Okay.
Nelly's Cosmic Cafe is great. I very much enjoy that. And unfortunately, I can't remember the name, but when I was in St. John's, Newfoundland, I think I had the best breakfast brunch of my life.
What was so special?
This one had pierogies involved in it, which I very much enjoy, but I had home fries as well. Sometimes you get good home fries, sometimes you don't. Also, I enjoy that type of breakfast, kind of like, you know, the honky breakfast, because I got a bit of Ukrainian background to me.
Honky breakfast?
Yeah.
Never heard that described
either. With the pierogies, right? So, well, it's a derogatory term being called a honky.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, that's what I call it, a honky breakfast.
A honky breakfast.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I'm going to ask for next time.
Okay, try that. Yeah. Especially coming from, you know, Buddha. That, you know,
yeah,
I don't know
you
if that's permittable.
Buddha breakfast, yeah.
Yeah, Buddha breakfast. Yeah. And then there was a place. Oh, I also enjoy Huevos Rancheros. That's like my all-time favorite breakfast.
Is that in Toronto?
No, that's a dish.
Oh, okay.
That's
I've never had that.
It's a
what is that?
Mexican style breakfast.
Which is
so,
what? Which consists of what?
You get basically you get eggs, and normally they're complemented with like there's salsa, there's beans involved. It's all that Mexican style stuff. Plus, there's normally a tortilla involved as well, which is completely delicious. And there's a place here in Toronto that also makes it with hollandaise sauce, which is unusual. And it's called Dr. Generosity at Runnymede and Bloor. Very good there. They also have something called the Bloor West Village Breakfast, which is a very Ukrainian part of the city, which has scrambled eggs, a kielbasa, and then dollops of cream cheese thrown right into the mix.
Wow.
Delicious. Oh, man.
Wow.
Okay, my breakfast with Blassie.
My breakfast with Blassie, I don't know how much you knew about this. Had you seen this before?
I remember seeing this in a video store when I was a kid, that it was there.
Did you know what it was about?
No, I had no idea. I didn't know it was a parody. All I knew is I knew who Freddie Blassie was because I saw him in the WWF. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know anything about this.
First I heard of this, My Breakfast with Blassie, was probably like 8 years now at this point. When the Fight Network first started, we actually bought the rights and to air this.
Yep.
I tried watching it at the time. Could not get through
it. I had a hard time.
Because essentially what this was, it was... It's a parody, first of all, of a 1981 film called My Dinner with Andre. And that film is a film entirely consisting of a conversation between friends over dinner, often dealing with some relatively heavy subject matter. And so this was a parody, you know, created by two filmmakers named Linda Lautrec and Johnny Legend, who's actually a musician who wrote a hit song called Pencil Neck Geek.
Yes, for Freddie.
Yes, for Freddie Blassie. And so... Basically, this was a project that, you know, they wanted to first cast Freddie Blassie in because they just, wow, this guy is so good on camera.
Mm-hmm.
And who did they want to, you know, choose to be the counter to Freddie Blassie? Well, Andy Kaufman's always, you know, hung around them and, you know, they knew that Andy Kaufman was a big wrestling fan. So they decided to hire Andy Kaufman to be this person to have this conversation with Freddie Blassie. I don't know if they actually met each other or were even friends before this whole thing happened. But anyway, they hired these two guys to basically parody that film with less than heavy subject matter of discussion, basically. So... Back then, when I first watched it, I mean, I knew of Andy Kaufman. I didn't really know what the guy was all about. I didn't really know his sense of humor. I expected an actual movie. I expected, you know, scenes and stuff. This was not that. This is certainly something that takes a lot of context before you are actually introduced to it. It's not something that I don't think you can really just broadcast. It's something that somebody has to come to. Somebody has to, you know, willingly seek out either via DVD or via download. It's not really something you can just say to a friend, hey, watch this. You know, you'll like this if you do, you know, if that person didn't know a lot about Andy Kaufman. It's really something that you kind of have to want to watch.
Yeah, I know a bit about Andy Kaufman and did not like this at all. Like, do not watch this. This is just
no.
I hated it.
Actually, my opinion kind of changed because knowing what I do know about Andy Kaufman now, I actually thought this was quite fun, quite enjoyable. Now, as somebody who, you know, didn't really know anything before, I was completely lost. But knowing what the directors were trying to go for, knowing what. There were certain parts of this where I was trying to guess what was real, what wasn't, what was just him trying to fuck with us. Because there are scenes here, some incredibly long scenes of them just debating over what to order on the menu.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can look at that like, wow, this is incredibly boring, or could this be another Great Gatsby moment where he's trying to just fuck with us? Look at you guys trying to watch us order bullshit off of the menus.
Yeah, well, I guess that's what it was, because it was boring. Also, like, everyone in it is cast. They're all there. It's all actresses at the back, and
I don't know if the waitresses were.
Maybe not, but clearly they were in on the fact that there's cameras pointing at them.
Yeah, definitely. This was originally 4.5 hours. I don't know if you knew that.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, they edited this down to 60 minutes from 4.5 hours.
4.5 hours they rolled on this.
A conversation for 4.5 hours.
My God, that's incredible. That's more than your podcasts.
Yes, it is. Oh, not all of them. I wonder if we've ever done one that
four
long.
Point, when you were at the MMA Expo.
Yes. We went 12, like 8 hours at that time. Anyway, this was a very low production thing. Probably it was all shot in video, not film. Probably done in one afternoon.
Yep.
It starts off with the caption, "The events shown here were filmed as it happened. The staff at Sambo's," the name of the restaurants, "appear as themselves." And we start off, Freddie Blassie meets up with Andy Kaufman in this restaurant. Andy Kaufman is still wearing his
neck brace
at this time.
Yeah.
So this was probably filmed right after his first match with Jerry Lawler after taking those two pile drivers. So Freddie Blassie is greeted by the Asian waitress. First thing Freddie Blassie says, "What nationality are you?" She says, "Thai." And then Blassie says, "I've been to Bangkok. I've never seen one of you pregnant before." And then starts to rub her belly for good luck.
Weird. And this
weird.
She later would be referred to as Buddha and Oriental as well.
Freddie, well, Blassie does say he himself was married to an Oriental, a Japanese woman. I found Andy Kaufman a little awkward and kind of nervous off the top here.
I didn't really take anything. I just didn't.
You
like
didn't. You didn't
that,
want to watch
I,
this.
I didn't. I didn't want to watch this part. I was very interested in watching I'm From Hollywood. I wasn't interested in watching this.
Yeah.
I did. A lot of it I also found could work as a podcast. I could just have the sound up, which I was walking around while watching.
Well, this played very much like a podcast.
Yeah.
I often find, like, to me, my favorite podcasts are sort of the ones where I feel like I'm just eavesdropping on a conversation between two friends. And I think this is what they were trying to go for here, was just, the audience is eavesdropping on Andy Kaufman and Freddie Blassie having a conversation.
But it was staged. It wasn't real.
Certain parts were staged.
I mean, it was always a hybrid of I'm sure they didn't know what topics they were going to tackle, but they knew at a point they were going to have an incident with the girls behind them.
Yes.
They knew that Bob Zmuda was going to walk up and do a magic trick at some point, and Andy was going to pull up boogers at some point.
Yeah.
Like, it was just odd.
Parts of it were definitely scripted. In fact, there was a group of girls sitting behind Kaufman and Blassie who one of them recognizes Kaufman and Blassie and proceeds to ask for an autograph. That's actually one of the directors, Linda Lautrec.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And the woman that – so Kaufman and Blassie start making like misogynistic comments about these women, and Kaufman eventually decides to hit on one of them. And I found that very amusing. It was just seeing this. Basically, Kaufman and Blassie were kind of playing their heel characters.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And it was essentially a dinner or a breakfast between these two heel characters.
Yep.
What would they be talking about? How would they act if they were trying to hit on girls? And it was Andy Kaufman trying to hit on this girl, saying, don't you know who I am? I'm Andy Kaufman. I'm very famous. I play Laka on Taxi. Yeah. And the woman actually he was trying to hit on, the girl with the nice legs, she actually ended up being his girlfriend up until his death.
Mm-hmm.
She was played by Courtney Love in the movie.
It was funny because you mentioned the dual heel personalities, and it was like Andy was like the young heel looking to Blassie as the experienced heel.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like what you had as far as this dynamic went within this breakfast.
I really thought Blassie was the star of this. I mean, if you probably don't think there was neither of them were stars.
Well, they're
– I thought Blassie carried this because, I think that you can admire Andy Kaufman as somebody who was able to stay in character no matter what had happened. I find pro wrestlers to be even better than him at that. And Freddie Blassie, I think, is.
I think he just like lived his gimmick,
yeah,
right?
Even exactly.
We had the chance. It was actually myself and Dan Lavransky. Dan did the interview, and I was teching it when the law would have been on 640. We had the chance to chat with Blassie. And he was one of those interviews where Mouth was so excited to chat with Freddie Blassie and was a phoner. And he was disappointed afterwards because Blassie was still giving him kayfabe the whole time. It was really hard to break through and get any real stuff out of him. He's a man that never dropped kayfabe probably till, the day he died.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little disappointing for Mouth to have that within the interview.
But understandable.
That's how he grew up.
Yeah. His entire life.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, it was like a religion.
Yep.
To stay in character.
Well, look at Hogan. I don't even think the real person Terry Bollea exists anymore. He's just been completely absorbed by whatever Hulk Hogan is or unfortunately has become.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, Freddie Blassie, I just found very full of personality and kind of very funny here. He just seems also kind of genuine and likable, just kind of like your grandfather who's, gone through a lot of rough shit in his day.
Your racist grandfather.
Your racist grandfather,
yep.
Exactly. They talk about their first trip to Japan and, talk about a certain number of things. At one point, this is where some of the staged incidents come in, where Kaufman goes to the bathroom and, of course, the fan across the table asks for the autograph. And then they give her the autograph and then they start talking behind her back saying how, don't you just hate it when, fans try to shake your hands? Because I go and wash my hands. I like to be very clean before a meal. Do you feel the same way, Jay, when people shake your hand?
No, but Matt Chin does.
Yeah, is he a germaphobe?
Yeah, he's a germaphobe. Absolutely. He carries, especially because we were doing stuff at conventions and you have the typical, there's a smell that goes through conventions and it's from the people. Let's be honest here. And Matt would carry Purell with him and be very, he's just such a germaphobe before eating and everything. And it's just kind of like with me, I'm not that really that
way. Does he do the trick which Andy Kaufman does where he holds his fork in his right hand to give people You know, kind of a clue as to don't shake this hand. I'm holding a fork right now.
Oh no, no, he does not. Well, we don't often get bothered when we're eating.
No,
it's more
not really.
So when we're doing public events and are meeting people at a booth.
You should hold a fork.
Fork all the time.
Freddie Blassie starts talking about, yeah, I mean, what if these people, you know, sometimes toilet paper breaks. You don't know if their finger goes through right through the tissue. So, like I said, in contrast to my dinner with Andre, not necessarily the heavy conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, they start talking about some of the wrestling that Kaufman's been involved with. And at this point, this nosy fan comes in. And this is, of course, as you mentioned, Bob Zmuda,
yeah.
who is Andy Kaufman's longtime partner. Zmuda comes in and just starts to do a magic trick. Says, I know who you are. I have something for you. Proceeds to pull out a straw out of his nose.
Yep.
And I thought this was like actually just like – I thought he was hiding it behind his hand.
Mm-hmm.
The guy actually stuck this up his nose, like up his head. And you could see like the little bits of blood on the tip of the thing. You don't look amused.
No, it was fine for what it was, I guess. It was just so weird. Everything was just so weird.
And that's Andy Kaufman.
Yeah, I agree.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm going to film a whole 60-minute conversation of me.
Four-hour conversation.
Edit it down to 60 minutes, and I'm going to make you people watch it if mm-hmm. you so choose. I found it, though, it ended – like definitely there was a scripted climax to this.
Yeah.
And this was when the fan comes back in a second. Well, okay. For the first real monumental place was when Kaufman tries to pick up on these girls.
Yeah.
And kind of fails, but also kind of succeeds because he's such a jerk. And then yet these girls are kind of somewhat interested. But the other climax of the scene of the film is when the nosy fan comes back in, proceeds to gross up Blassie even more by pulling two more straws out of his nose and then vomits on the table.
Yep.
And the reaction that Kaufman and Blassie have to this random man vomiting on their table, I found hilarious.
Did you? I did. I was just like, I wondered if they. I'm sure that Kaufman knew the vomit was coming.
I don't
happening.
Think Blassie knew.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
I don't think Blassie knew the vomit was coming. I'm assuming Blassie had met Zmuda before, but might not have been privy to what Zmuda was going to do.
Could you just imagine the script, what it looked like on paper, though?
I don't think there was a paper.
Probably not.
Nope.
Probably maybe.
I think
on,
it was Zmuda and Kaufman talking about it and going, you're going to do this, I'm going to do that, all right, we're just going to play off.
What if you came in and started to vomit?
Yeah, great, good idea. He's going to puke.
He's going to puke. So that was that. I found this quite funny by the end. I mean, I thought it was – to me, it was really apparent that Blassie is tremendous on camera in any type of setting. I thought he was even better than Kaufman at staying in character and just giving an enjoyable performance. I happen to like it a lot more than I thought I would.
No, I didn't like it.
Okay. Well, what do you rate this?
Can I give negatives?
Of course
like,
you
no,
can.
It's just like
I've given a negative alpha.
Yeah, I have like no, just a zero. Like, don't watch this. There's no point. I have nothing for this. If it's again, this is probably performance art. Maybe I don't get it, but I don't like it. I don't, and I'm looking at it from the perspective of not knowing anything about it before, knowing something about it now, and I still don't find value. And granted, I haven't seen My Dinner with Andre, and if it's a parody should still be funny, I guess. Maybe I'm just not getting the humor. I just didn't like it.
Well, like I said, this is something definitely that takes a lot of references and familiarity with what it's trying to riff off of before
yep.
you can really appreciate it. You need some I'm really appreciative of how I kind of stumbled onto this. I mean, first, I recommend watching Man on the Moon. I mean,
yes.
who knows whether or not how factual that was.
Mm-hmm.
But at least it gives you a good context
yep.
of what there is. And then watching this I'm from Hollywood with Andy Kaufman to give you a kind of a perspective of his wrestling involvement. And then to go from that to this where you get a bit of the wrestling involved, but you also kind of get a sense of how this guy was thinking as a performer, where there are parts that were just kind of boring. You don't know if this is supposed to be there, but clearly if they edited 4.5 hours into this,
yep.
even the parts of him just meaninglessly looking at a menu trying to order, that definitely was intentionally included into this. But I actually thought it was a fun, low-budget, raw experiment involving two guys who seem to have good chemistry by the end.
Why don't you guys try it again? Why don't we have My Breakfast with Wei?
Yeah. Or and, my It would have to be, have some alliteration. Like
alliteration? So we got to get my... That's a W. That's a tough one. Normally your name is like, boom, into whatever parody we got. Like Wacism and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's a great one.
I know you enjoy that one. My potluck with Pollock.
Ah, there you
so
go.
There we go.
My potluck with Pollock.
Yeah.
We'll do that.
Okay.
We'll do that and we'll see if we do better than zero on the Jason Agnew score.
All right, great, great. You guys can just sit there and talk.
Yeah. Kind of like what we're doing now.
That would be interesting, though, because of John's weirdness to food, right? So he could explain his theories on not wanting to eat an apple that's not all red I don't like this because it has cream cheese in it. John, you've been eating it for half an hour and you said it was good, but I don't like it anymore.
Not only for his weirdness to food, but his weirdness to certain fans.
And talk. Oh, we could just have fans walk in, but legit, though.
Like, if a fan came up to John and I and pulled out a straw out of his nose.
Yes.
Pollock would – it would ruin his day. Like, it would ruin his week.
You'd be like, yes, it's very interesting. How did you get it up there?
I would thought it would be hilarious. That would be a fun experiment, my potluck with Pollock. So that's that.
And it would be all food that fans make and bring.
Oh, wow.
That's a potluck, right?
I suppose so, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how many wrestling fans out there are capable of cooking.
That would be the beauty of it, though. So they experiment.
A lot of potatoes.
And they make food, and then they bring it, and John has to eat it.
Yeah.
And we watch that transpire, and you just talk to him about what he's eating.
And perhaps you would play the nosy fan.
There you go.
You'd be our frequent collaborator who played the nosy fan.
Your Bob Zamuda.
Would you vomit for us on the table?
I'd try. I would definitely try.
You would definitely maybe show your ass.
I've done that before.
Thing.
That's nothing new. Nothing new.
So that's Andy Kaufman. Any other thoughts?
No, I think that we've covered it across. I liked one and I didn't like the other one.
Yeah. Have you seen like any other documentaries or any other types of works on Kaufman that you might recommend?
What have I watched? I mean, I've listened. You can go and you can probably download the Bob Zmuda interview that Mark Maron did. And if you're a wrestling fan, you'll be able to call him out on a lot of bullshit in there. But it was almost completely talking about Kaufman in this interview. So I found it quite interesting to listen to, knowing what I do know. And other than that, I don't know if there's an A&E biography on him. That would be curious to see what they do. But having said that, with Zmuda's influence in the world of A&E, I'm sure you wouldn't even get the real story there.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just such a cloudy portrait of history.
If only there was a Dave Meltzer of the comedy world. And there could very well be, but I'm just not aware.
Meltzer could probably be the Dave Meltzer of this particular world. Because it was so wrestling influenced that he probably knows more about this than anyone do and was maybe able to cut through the bullshit somehow.
Dave Meltzer probably knows the truth behind the JFK assassination.
Probably.
Everything. Religion.
Everything.
The meaning of
he
life.
He is an alien. Actually, and that's why he knows all this stuff.
Yes. We have one piece of feedback from one person. Ronaldo from Milan, Italy. People might remember Tyson or Rodman or Mr. T more, but no one had the charisma of Andy Kaufman. Here's a guy truly devoted to his art. Yeah, if you watch the Jim Carrey movie, Andy is portrayed as basically a dork, more concerned with conning people than to create something. But isn't this the core aspect of wrestling that makes for great characters? Add the fact that this is a kayfabe documentary in the vein of Spinal Tap that Memphis people took for real, and you have a little masterpiece. So thank you, Ronaldo. Well, I think that wraps it up. But coming up next week, John Pollock will be back. And we actually talked about what we would review.
His trip.
Yeah, just the whole...
The guy's been in Russia for 3 weeks. He should be taking notes while he's there.
Yep, we are going to actually review all 2 weeks of the World Combat Games.
Great.
So we'll be talking about every little bit of Sambo and Kendo and Wushu.
Yeah, and his, like, I want to hear about these pig knuckles. Because I was just talking to the boss man here, Chad, and he had said that he thinks John won, like, a pig knuckle he was there and John Lang won like a pig knuckle eating competition or something.
Shut
like
up,
that
really
something like that like he just
won
went,
a pig knuckle eating competition.
I don't know, that's what Chad was saying. He's just like, the pig knuckles and John loves them, and they're like pig knuckles, and then they're wrapped in something and deep fried, and John was all about it. And I saw him tweeting out to Court Bauer about these pig knuckles, that he actually likes them. I'm shocked. That's, I'm blown away by Pollock trying this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Apparently coffees are very small over there, Chad said.
European.
Yep, there you go.
I think that's the thing they do. All right, so we actually won't be reviewing that. We'll be reviewing...
I'm serious.
Well, I'm not.
Okay.
We will talk a little about pig knuckling.
Okay, great.
But on a completely unrelated note, Triple H?
Oh.
What's the name of that thing? Thy Kingdom Come?
Something like that.
That DVD, yes. We were actually set to review this before he left, but obviously the whole... what is it? The debacle with the whole Jim Crockett Promotions documentary and delayed everything.
Right.
So we'll be reviewing Triple H, Thy Kingdom Come. By this point, anybody who probably wanted to watch it probably has already seen it. So please leave your feedback for us. If you haven't seen it, go check it out right now and tell us what you thought, because this is Triple H, the Andy Kaufman of...
No, let's not do that.
No?
I don't know what he's the Andy Kaufman.
He's the Andy Kaufman of. Actually, I probably shouldn't go there.
Don't
his love is genuine, I would say.
His love is genuine?
Yeah.
For Steph?
Yeah. Of course.
Genuinely convenient.
we shouldn't talk about that. They have kids. We shouldn't talk about that. Anyway, well, thank you, Jason Agnew, for joining me on this.
Thank you.
Do you have a song we can go out with?
Well, either you can find the opening, which was done by a band called The Bobs, and they use this throughout the I'm From Hollywood documentary. It's an a cappella group called The Bobs, or you could just play the REM Man on the Moon.
No, so. We're going to go with the less cliched
find the Bobs.
A cappella Bobs.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Or Pencil Neck Geek if you can't find that.
You got to pick one, Jay, because people are going to expect all
if you can
songs.
Find The Bobs, play The Bobs.
Okay.
Okay, that's number one. If you can't find that... Play Pencil Neck Geek.
We can find anything.
Can't find that? You play Man on the Moon.
I have an extensive collection here, all on vinyl.
I know. I see that. That's incredible.
So I can load up the box.
Amazing.
Yeah, I just found it. Boom. Here it is. Great.
And an evil sneer, basking in the spotlight as he heard the crowd's jeer. But Andy wasn't tough enough. Big time wrestling can be so rough. No, Andy wasn't tough enough. So he started wrestling women.